Welcome to What Am I Rolling? A twice monthly RPG one-shot podcast. Or normally it is. My name is Fiona, and this is a very special, if incredibly raw, episode of What Am I Rolling? So I'm going to be completely transparent with you all out there. You might have noticed over the last couple of months, we've just only done interviews with game designers to sort of tide us over to the next one-shot, as I always say. And the reason is I've done a huge life change and I've moved countries, which has been incredibly exhausting, tiring, exciting, all the different emotions. But it's meant that my time to sit down and record, organize, run, and then edit actual play content has been very limited. So I've had to really pick and choose what I've been doing. Whilst we've got a couple of episodes still on the back burner, and I am going to be starting to focusing on them now that I've finally settled and moved to my new home, we don't really have too much in terms of content now. So one thing I thought we could do in the meantime is to do some world building. Now, I will be honest, I've only done little bits and pieces of world building. I've never seen a project through to completion. And on our other podcast, the DM's Book Club, myself and my co-host Hamilton, we did a couple of prompts from a book called The 30 Days of World Building, an author's step-by-step guide to building fictional worlds by Angeline Trevina. And that was really fun and we had a really good time. And we only did like a couple of prompts, but it was really interesting. So I thought we can create our own little world. And it's one of those things which is always like, oh, it should be on the bucket list. You know, you see settings come out every day on Kickstarter and people write, you know, when we talked to Chris Pacetti a couple of weeks ago, they talked about being like a failed writer, then getting into game design. So I think hand in hand, creating a setting may be the first step in towards game design, which is something I have considered. It's something I think I've got some skills I could do, but I've never actually done that before. You can get Angeline Trevina's books. She's got loads of them, I would say. Let me find the titles of them for you. I'm taking this from the Complete World Building Guide, which is like three books in one, I believe. We've got the 30 Days of World Building, which we're going to be focusing on in this episode. Then she's done stuff like How to Destroy the World, From Sanctity to Sorcery, which is like about magic and belief systems, creating history. And I know she's got a couple of other ones out as well. This book came out in 2020. So I'll just read out what it says from the beginning. So using this guidebook. If you're looking to build your first fictional world and you're not sure where to start, then this is the book for you. If you like to deepen and expand your world, this is the book for you. If you find the idea of world building daunting and you've been put off even starting your world, then this is definitely the book for you. So definitely, this is the book for me, I guess. This guidebook is broken into 30 easy, manageable prompts for you to complete. If you work your way through, simply complete one prompt per day, by the end of the month, you will have a strong, solid basis for your world. From there, you can grow it more. This list of world-building prompts is not, by any means, exhaustive. Depending on your genre, your story, your characters, and the world you need to create for them, you may need aspects that aren't covered by this workbook. And likewise, some of these prompts may not be relevant to you. Think of it like a garden. This book gives you the foundations to build upon. It helps you plant the seeds and offers you seeds that you may not have considered planting yourself, but you'll need to cultivate it and water it. And you may have plants of your own that you would like to include. A special tree, your favourite flower. You may like to have a pond, or a bench, or a marquee. You will also need to create a safe, singular space to keep all your world-building notes, whether in hard copy or digitally. It is surprisingly easy to get lost in your own world and surprisingly easy to forget the details of it. This will become your world-building Bible, your one-stop shop for everything you need to know about your world. When you come to writing your story, keep these notes next to you, so that everything you need to know about your world is in easy reach. Above all, enjoy world building. Enjoy exploring it and watching it come to life around you. It's true, I do find world building quite intimidating because I don't know where I would start per se. And I don't know whether, because I think once I get going, I'm sure it'll be fine. I just don't know if anything I have is interesting or exciting. I think I would maybe suffer from scope creep, you know, that idea of like you have an idea and then it just expands and then it all sort of falls apart. And I appreciate that this particular guide, it's meaning it for like writing a novel per se, but I think any sort of prompts to help you think about a world. I think the only difference is that I have to be very aware that the world or the setting I'm creating, it's almost like a living document, because if people are going to play in my world, then I have to be ready for the players to impact on it and change it in some way. So we've got world-building facts this next. So while fantasy and science fiction authors may be doing the heavy lifting when creating their fictional worlds, world-building exists in pretty much every genre. Whether it's the creation of an imaginary cafe in a real town, or imagining an alternative outcome to an event from history, any book of any kind can involve world-building. At the fantasy, sci-fi, and horror end of the scale, the world-building heavyweights, it may mean the creation of a magic system or monsters to slot alongside the real world. Or it may mean building an entirely new world with new species and cultures, right up to an entire universe of planets. It can become quite the epic task. Now, I don't know about you, but I tend to get easily overwhelmed by epic tasks. Oh, you and me both. I just look at the job as a whole and I can't untangle where to start, and I end up doing nothing at all. As much as I understand the usefulness and the importance of breaking things down into workable chunks, the ability and method for doing this very often escapes me. Unlike many other people, I can see the wood very clearly. It's the trees I have trouble with. This is what the workbook is designed to do. It breaks the task of building a fully fictional world into sizable chunks, 30 of them, with a bonus one at the end. If you simply complete one task per day, by the end of the month, you will have a whole new world to begin writing in, or to continue building into finer detail. One task per day. That's not difficult or scary, is it? World building doesn't need to be difficult or complicated. It doesn't need to take forever or be an excuse for never actually writing the book. It doesn't need to be overwhelming or intimidating. At the other end of the scale, it shouldn't be something you haphazardly bolt on in a last-minute panic. As you'll discover throughout this book, world-building should be tightly integrated with your plot and characters. Your characters and their goals, their struggles, their journey, that's the reason your readers show up. That's the reason they keep reading. You can have the most amazing world, but if you don't populate it with compelling, sympathetic, and relatable characters, readers will simply stop turning the pages. Likewise, if you write amazing characters and put them into a flat paper world, your readers won't want to walk along with them or explore them. Just as you want your readers to believe in your characters, you want them to believe in your world too. Let them smell the salt on the breeze, hear the buzzing of insects. Let them feel the heat of the burning buildings and feel the oppression of the government. Let them walk every single step with your characters. Invite them in, and invite them to stay, whether they want to set up home there or fight to change it. Give your characters somewhere real to live, and give your readers somewhere real to visit. So, what are you waiting for? Let's get started with the basics of world building. So, let's get started then. So day one is genre and setting. The genre of your book can have a big impact on its setting and how much of your world you'll actually need to map out. For example, a space opera may require an entire galaxy with multiple planets with their world-building requirements. Alternatively, you might be mapping out a single spaceship. With epic fantasy, the clue is in the name. You're probably going to be creating a vast amount of world. However, urban fantasy might only require a single city, or even just a single street. So, your genre can help to determine how much setting you need. And likewise, your chosen setting can help to determine your genre. If you're unsure, there are many resources online that give a description of all different subgenres. Remember that genre requirements can be quite fluid, and that your story may blend two or more of them together. It is also the case that new subgenres emerge with conventions of their own. Okay, so let's have a think then, shall we? I know the temptation here is to go for something horror, because that is always my wheelhouse, is something horror. But something I've had on my mind for a little while, I had an idea of like a monster of the week kind of game idea, which is kind of similar to like monster of the week TV shows like Buffy or Angel. The idea there's a group of people or hunters that come together and dispatch supernatural entities in some way, but maybe not in the sense of like hunting them. It's not like Hunter the Reckoning or anything like that. Although it uses that sort of system of like, you know, I think they're called cells, and then they're sort of called, is it mysteries? I can't remember. It goes up like the different levels. And I think I want to set it, I don't want to set it nowadays or future because of, I don't want technology to be in the way. So I'm thinking about setting it maybe early 90s, late 80s. And then genre I think is supernatural. Folk horror. Urban. 80s, 90s, modern times. I think a big city of some sort. Maybe even putting like Hellboy in there a little bit so that it's Suicide Squad possibly as well. That idea of there's a group of misfits coming together and doing battle or working with enemies of darkness in some way. The reason I'm sort of like hesitant about it, I don't want it to be we're killing creatures. In my head, what I'm thinking of is having it like, mysteries, a bit like mysteries as well, whereby we're trying to solve or trying to help people who just happen to be, I don't know, vampires or happen to be ghouls or something like that, that they're in need of our help and they could only have the help of the living. Maybe that's what it is. It's like undead need the help of the living. In that case then as well, it feels a little bit like Vaesen could come into this as well as a system. Because that would be quite interesting, because Vaesen obviously is like a, you know, industrialization meets fae folklore and that coming in there. But in the sort of 1800s, 1900s, was we're looking at the 80s and 90s now. I don't think it's going to be too much on the horror side, I'll be honest. I definitely think there's a more mystery and less fighting as well. I think people need our help. So I guess fighting is the last resort. Okay. I'm sure there are other inspirations I can think of as well. I'll have a quick Google. Oh, Veronica Mars, of course. Oh, Agent Carter, yeah. Okay, so what I've got so far. So for day one, genre and setting. I'm having to think of like systems that I could draw inspiration from or something that would work in that system. Because that's what I'm kind of going off. But ultimately, this could be a world that any system can use. But I think systems like Monster of the Week, maybe the Between from the Gauntlet, because that uses that sort of monster hunter type thing. We've got Vaesen as well, which is, again, monster hunters or fighting against fae-like creatures, or Vaesen as they're called, but it's not about fighting per se, it's almost like helping them. And Hunter's Reckoning, which is using that idea of the structures of like the cells and then the conspiracies, that sort of thing. But people can fit in as like a cell of hunters, a group of misfits that sort of come together and work in this sort of world that we're thinking of. Then in terms of genre, I've sort of picked a couple of them, but sort of like trying to pinpoint what I'm looking for. So genre, I've gone for supernatural, folk horror, but it is urban. I'm thinking the time period is probably late 80s, early 90s to get rid of any technical issues, because I don't really want people to figure out things with smartphones and computers per se. Or at least, you know, I'm always a good fan of a big library. I want it to be set in a big city of some sort, or at least a place with good transport links. So then maybe the hub is in the city, but if they're called out on mysteries and stuff, they can go elsewhere to, like, say, the Lake District or to mountainsides to pick up on reports and stuff. And then inspirations I put down here as a third, sort of like trying to help me figure out what I'm looking for in terms of like a story or like how I'd build this world. So I'm thinking, for me, I'm getting senses of like Buffy and Angel, that idea of like a group of people coming to work together to defeat evil in some way. But at the same time, I'm thinking Veronica Mars, Agent Carter, that sort of like investigatory. It is more about helping and solving mysteries rather than fighting them. Because ultimately, the people that you're engaged with, we don't know their background, and it's not a justification to be like, oh, they are undead. Like, you know, it's something I'm thinking of, like the fighting and violence is a last resort, and that the undead in this particular world or this particular setting need the help of living to be able to finish whatever business it is. And then thinking about the types of people that could come into this world. So again, thinking of that, like Hellboy, Suicide Squad, Misfits, a TV show, this idea of that they're a group of people who all have sort of special roles or special powers, perhaps, or they're different species, etc. And they have their own flawedness, but they all come together to work as a good group. And I think that's what I want out of this sort of story, out of this world, that there are cells or groups of people who apply, and they apply for their own reasons, but they have certain gifts or certain sights. And that works in quite well with Vaesen, and I know Monster of the Week has similar things as well. So yeah, I think that's a good start, at least, or I hope so anyway. Day 2 is draw your map. Remember, it doesn't need to be a beautiful work of art, as long as it's useful to you as you write. As long as it prevents you from getting lost in your world. This will become your absolute go-to piece of information. So it's important that you keep it beside you as you write and update it as you need to. You can either draw this in hard copy or create a digital map. Just make sure you keep everything together by your side as you write. Already I'm like, oh no. I wanted to challenge myself a little bit and be like, I'll draw it all from scratch, etc. But I think, let's just use a place that I know and get the map from it. So I'm going to go, if I go to Google Maps, there must be a good map somewhere. So I think for this particular setting, I'm going to keep it nice and simple because we have stuff like Vampire the Masquerade, which I actually should put in my, the touchstones as well as a setting. Because I know Vampire the Masquerade has like source books on, you know, like Chicago and London. Let's just make it very simple and straightforward. This first place that we're visiting, or the first sort of area we're going to visit, is the Isle of Dogs. Now, if you don't know what the Isle of Dogs, it is quite close to the financial area in London, and it's a little island, like, it's still connected to sort of the areas around it, but it's got a lot of history of, like, wharfs, and there's a canal, there's a farm, and lots of housing, etc., as well as businesses and buildings and stuff. And it's quite contained. There's like two big roads that come in on either side of the aisle. So I think I'm going to try and find a good map of that and use that as my sort of starting point. Yes, what's it say on the Wikipedia? So the Isle of Dogs is a large peninsula bounded on three sides by a large meander in the River Thames in East London, which includes Cubitt Town, Millwall and Canary Wharf districts. The area was historically part of the manor, hamlet, parish, and for a time, the wider borough of Poplar. The name has no official status until 1987, the creation of the Isle of Dogs neighbourhood by the Tower Hamlets London Borough Council. It has been known locally as simply the island since the 19th century. Okay. Let's go for that then. All right, that is a screenshot of the island then. Based on the Isle of Dogs. Cool. Easy enough then. Towns and cities simply don't spring up randomly. There are many essential decisions that need to be made before settling on one place or another. The most important thing that is needed in any settlement is access to fresh water. In brackets, unless you're writing about non-human characters have no need for water, in which case they will need access to their essential element for life. Draw the water resources onto your map. Oceans, rivers, streams, lakes, reservoirs, any bodies of water that might exist in your world. Also think about where these water sources flow from and where they flow to. Look at both natural sources of water and man-made sources of water. How much of that natural landscape has been controlled and changed for their needs? And what about water resources that no longer exist, or ones that have been forgotten or lost underground? So yeah, looking at the map for the Isle of Dogs, obviously there is a huge big river that goes all the way around it. Obviously that's River Thames that sort of sees it on the three sort of sides, you know, sort of the east, south and west. And at the top, there is like a kind of, I think, man-made sort of like dock, the South Dock. And then it goes into the Millwall Outer Dock. So these docks in the middle of the island were sort of man-made a little bit. So that's why it's sort of called the island a little bit, because it is kind of surrounded on all sides by water. But the main big river as it is on the east, south and west. But there are ways to get in from the north through water. So in that case, what's it asking me to do? It's asking me to think about any other bodies of water. Well, I mean, those are the main bodies of water for sure. So fresh water, and it flows from west to east, going out into the ocean that way. We'll keep that the same. How much has the natural landscape been controlled and changed for their needs? So I think, yeah, ultimately it has been changed quite a bit because of the history of the docks and the urbanization of it. So that has been changed a little bit. So there's definitely, maybe we can make it that there's more locks, canal locks perhaps, and maybe there is more authority, not authority, but like more policing perhaps on the canals. Maybe, if we really want to make this like a really important area, not only would you need admin to get in and out on any kind of boat, but the police are also in boats. Not little speedboats per se, but like river boats of some sort. What about water sources that no longer exist, or ones that have been forgotten about or lost underground? I would love to think there's an underground, like, small lake somewhere. I just don't know where it would be. There definitely would be sewers, right? Like, maybe there's a much bigger sewage system, like big holes, and that's where, the sewage system, maybe that's where any criminal activity gets through. They can't necessarily risk being on the boats coming in, but criminal activity through the sewer network, which you can get access to on pretty much all sides. But again, police would patrol it. I don't know, like, I've said 80s and 90s now. I kind of want to go... I do want to do, like, maybe Victorian now that I'm thinking about it. Sort of, yeah. We'll do late 1880s, 1890s. Turn of the century. We'll change that. And that would mean as well, thinking about the map and stuff, there's a lot of political upheaval and maybe more dock riots and stuff. So that could be something. So I don't think there's any water things that are lost, but there are other ways to get in via the waterway networks. But they are heavily guarded by the island's police force. Day 4, capital. Bearing in mind that your people require plenty of access to fresh water, place your capital city or cities on your map. Is it close to the coast, further inland, strategically placed for defending your country? Think carefully about its position. Remember that you can reverse engineer this. You can always place it and then add in reasons for its position afterwards. Always be asking yourself, why? Why is it here and not there? It has to make sense for your world and make sense for your world's history and make sense for the needs of your people. Think about its name and where it came from. Has it been named after something else nearby, or has something else nearby been named after it? Has it always been called that? And does everyone call it by the same name? So already I've run into a problem. It's not that big an area, to be honest with you, the Isle of Dogs. And that's fine. That's all okay. But what am I thinking? Where would people go? Where would a governing body, perhaps? Like the MP office would be, I guess. That's what I'm looking for. I think the most important building is going to be on Marsh Wall, which is quite close to, like, the South Dock. And I think the reason why... Maybe we'll just call it the Marsh Wall offices. Oh, but then we've also got the print works as well. I think we'll call it... How about this? We call it the Marshal's Wall Office. Because the Marshal is the governing person of the island. Maybe has a bit more prestige or a bit more power than, say, like an MP. I want to say voted in some way. Maybe it is a democracy still. But that's where all the sort of controlling power is. And decisions are being made along Marsh Wall to the Marshal Wall's office. I have seen, though, there are other places that have been marked on this map thanks to Google. Sir John McDougall's Gardens, which sounds amazing. There's Folly House Beach. I think Folly House could be a cool name. I'm going to keep that down for a second. There's obviously Mudchute Farm. There's also, like I said, the West Ferry Print Works. And then there's also a whole ton of, like, different wharfs. So, like, Burling Wharf. So we've got a ton of names. Maybe the Marshal Wall office isn't great. No, I think it's something different. Let's call it Folly House. So Folly's House is east on the island. And it's next to the beach. Perfect. I mean, to be fair, there's not many beaches on the Isle of Dogs. It's more pebbly than anything. But it does have a good view out over to the other side of the river of the Thames, which would be Greenwich, which is definitely more picturesque, I would imagine. Where did the name Folly House come from? Well, why don't we have a look-see, shall we? Nestled behind a large concrete tower block is a small beach that overlooks the O2 Arena. Folly House Beach is in Cubitt Town. On the Isle of Dogs, concrete steps lead to a pebbled beach out onto the River Thames. The small beach is often filled with families during the warmer weather and is a lovely spot to take some on the London skyline. It doesn't say where Folly House comes from as a name. I do quite like it though, so we'll keep it. I actually think I've walked across this beach before, or walked around it. The Folly House is named after the Folly House Beach. What's funny about it, I'm just reading up on it here, there's lots of litter that happens on the beach. And so often it says on this article, it says that there are like volunteers that go and do litter picking. So I'm wondering then, maybe Folly House is also known as like the tip. Maybe Folly House is also known as the bin. And there's like phrases like get to the bin or get in the bin. Maybe it's a mixture of like a governing body, but also where the police, the marshals are as well. So the marshal officers in there. So get in the bin could be like, that's a kind of saying for it. Has it always been called that? Yeah, okay. Does everyone call it by the same thing? No, so we've got the two. We've got Folly House and the bin. Yeah, I think that's all right. We've got a few other things as well. Oh, there's island gardens as well. All right, got plenty to go with. Day 5, which is landscape. Think now about the landscape of your world. It can be very tempting to start with a coastline in the east, run mountains to the west, and then throw every variant of landscape you can think of in between. Different countries can have different kinds of landscapes, but always look at where they border each other. It's very unlikely that marshland will instantly give way to dry wasteland, or that a vast desert will border a deep rainforest. Think about what's likely and what makes sense. You want your readers to truly believe in your world, to be able to imagine themselves in it. So, begin by writing what you know. Look at our world, and the differences between places. Is the area mostly dry or wet? Is it lush and fertile, or rocky and sparse? Is it flat plains, or hills and valleys? The variation of landscape will largely depend on the scope of your map. If your map is a singular country, or just part of a country, you won't see that much diversity. If you're creating a whole world, you'll have more scope. And if you're building an entire universe, you're able to go a bit crazy. But remember that each of your planets will still need to make sense, both by themselves and where they're positioned in the galaxy. So, looking at what it said on the Wikipedia. So it says that the soil is alluvial and silty in nature, underlaid by clay or mud, with a peat layer in places. Yes, it talked about Stepney Marsh earlier in the thing as well, so let's copy this down. So maybe then it's not as concrete as what we're used to today. The buildings are definitely more brick. Oh, there'll be definitely more wooden structures as well. Yeah, I guess only the fanciest of buildings would be made out of brick and stone. And everything else is sort of more wood. Certainly the wharf itself, or the different wharves. They'll have, and different docks would be definitely wooden structures. In that case, then there's not many. I don't want to say there's too many high-rise buildings. Then it's just not as high-rise as we think. What else? Let's go for cobble streets as well. Gas lamps, lamp lighters. Maybe because I can see there's Mudchute Park. Maybe there's more horses around. Horses and stables, coaches. Because I assume that turn of the century Stepney Marsh, Isle of Dogs is definitely more farmland, or maybe a bit of a poorer area, but maybe we could make it up for this particular version of it, is that it's a little bit more with it, like in terms of structures. So we've got a few more variations in the different kinds of people that live here, different residences, different housing situations, but maybe a good mix of districts of like richer and poorer and dock workers. Less tourists. We've also got that those big canals in the middle. The last time I went, there was loads of swans around there, swans and birds around sort of the central docks. Those beaches around the sides of the island, they're all pebble and gritty, not like nice sand. Thank you. that's all I'll do for now. So we've got 5 days worth of stuff here, 5 different prompts. So let's go through what we've got covered so far. Again, living document, we'll see how things go. Day one was genre and setting. And we looked at different sort of systems and stuff, and again, taking that inspiration for like Monster of the Week, Vason, Hunt of the Reckoning, The Between, and a little bit of Vampire the Masquerade. Those are sort of the genres, which lead into the genres, sorry. So thinking of that supernatural, maybe some folklore horror, but set in an urban sort of scape. We've moved the time period back because we were thinking like late 80s to early 90s, but actually let's move it back a century. So we've got sort of almost like a Victoriana, turn of the century sort of vibe to it. Because that gets rid of my big thing of like not having technology to help us out with this. It also means, I guess, we can have folklore that is maybe that I can create and isn't necessarily like, oh, it's definitely a vampire or it's definitely this, etc., that we could easily find out. It's something that we can go through and discuss as players. It makes me think of Trophy Dark a little bit as well, like having our own little bestiary describing creatures. Or was it Trophy Gold? I think Trophy Gold was the one that had it in. But maybe Trophy Dark has it as well. But it has to be a big city with good transport links, which I think we've done. We've talked about like coaches and horses, and we've also talked about like waterways as well. Inspirations, again, maybe stuff that I might need to go away and sort of read up a bit or watch more of. Buffy and Angel, which are supernatural Monster of the Week stuff, but also I want to pin in that mystery element more rather than fighting stuff. We've got that Veronica Mars, Agent Carter, but also allowing for our players to also be maybe supernatural in their own creation. So we got thinking about like groups of misfits, like the TV show Misfits or Suicide Squad or Hellboy, like being able to have really cool powers and maybe be flawed in that certain way as well. Underpinning it all is definitely murder mystery or mysteries in general, because what I think the key thing I want to get across is that the undead, they need the help of the living, and fighting them and violence in general is a last resort against the oppression of this darkness that is surrounding the island. Day two was draw your map, and all I've done, I've just for ease taken the map, the Google map of the Isle of Dogs in London, because that's somewhere I know quite well. And because we set it back about 100 years and a bit, whilst it's not going to be perfect, this map, it does outline the fact that we do have docks, lots of cool areas to go and investigate and hide people in. So we've got lots of different variations of buildings and political upheaval as well. Day three was talking about water sources. So we know that the isle, or the island even, is surrounded by the River Thames on 3 sides. And then it has the South Dock and the Millwall Outer Dock in the middle of it as well. So it indicates to us that this water sources, there's fresh water coming in from the west going out to the east, going out into the ocean. But that also means that these are, is a good place to travel. As a result, maybe there's more policing or guarding over the waterways. So that means there's a big police presence perhaps on this particular island, or certainly around the sewer system, where people can get in and out easily if they don't have the exact paperwork to get through the canal locks that we've sort of put on here as well. So we've kind of hinted at already that there's going to be some criminal activity, which makes sense for what the setting is, what we're looking at. Day four was the capital. Obviously, it meant really like, where's the capital city in this world we're creating? I've changed it slightly to be like, where is the governing office? Where's the body of power going to be on this particular island? The most important building is going to be, it's going to be Folly House, which is on the east side of the island next to Folly Beach. There was a debate about whether we put it in the Marsh Wall, along the Marsh Wall Road, but actually I think Folly House makes more sense. The idea is that Folly House is like a big grand building, and the person that's residing there, the sort of governing person, we've put them as like a little note saying they are higher up than probably an MP, so a member of parliament we've got here. So there's some sense of democratic power that's going on, but they are controlling power and they make all the decisions there. The other thing to note is that Folly House looks over Folly House Beach, which is constantly covered in litter, and there's always like calls for volunteers to come and pick up litter. So as a result, Folly House is also known as the bin. And because there's links to like the marshal officers and the police force, there's the sort of local saying of like, you just got out the bin, or get in the bin. That sort of like play on words perhaps, which definitely needs more work. There are other places as well that we've just noted down for now. So we've got like Mudchute Farm and Park, we've got the West Ferry Printworks, Island Gardens, and there's various different wharfs around the island. Lots of different places for docks. So again, lots of different ways we can put our mysteries in. And then finally, day five, we looked at landscape. Again, just talking about it from what it says on the Wikipedia page, that the soil is quite slitty in nature. There's clay and mud and peat. It was known as the Stepney Marsh around about this time as well. So it maybe isn't as glamorous as we think it would be, this place. And the buildings itself, they're more stone and brick rather than concrete. Maybe there's a big variation in terms of the structures themselves. There's a bit more wood, a bit more Victorian. Although it's been a long time since the Great Fire of London, but it's just something to think about, I guess. But the buildings aren't as high as we would think of today. There's also like cobbled streets, gas lamps, which have lamp lighters. Because of Mudchute Farm and Park, there's probably a lot more horses and stables and coaches. Maybe that's what we'll turn it into, that the Mudchute Farm is actually going to be a big stables or coach place. That'd be quite cool. And then we've got canals in the middle, so maybe there's more birds and swans perhaps that are going around. So that, again, I'm just thinking it's not really landscape per se, but they're more likely to be around in that sort of area. The little bit of beach that we have here around on the very outskirts of this isle, they're more pebbly and gritty. They don't use any sand per se. And you can look out from Folly House across the way over towards Greenwich, our neighbouring sort of district, which looks so much nicer than what is on the island. And there you go. That's going to be our first couple of prompts out of our 30-day world building. I'm excited. Again, I think I'm a bit rusty as well. I'm just trying to think things out loud. So hopefully this has been some sort of interesting to people to listen to. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks and we'll just see where we get from here. If you want to follow along at home, I'll put a link in the show notes to where you can get this particular book, the Complete World Building, like 3-in-1 book that I've been using by Angeline Trevina. And yeah, we'll go from it from there. And thanks for bearing with me. We'll see if this comes to anything. Hopefully it does.